This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, October 6, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums.
And I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar.
The 23rd Annual Chili Pepper Cross Country Race is Saturday, October 15th, at the University of Arkansas's Cross Country Course in Fayetteville. Over 80 college teams and 120 high school teams will be competing, plus 750 runners will participate in the Open 10K and the 1 Mile Fun Run. Registration and more information available at chilipepperfestival.org.
Later on this edition of Ozarks, Arkansas-born Charlene Harris has become synonymous with vampires. Her Suki Stackhouse mysteries inspired the HBO hit True Blood. She was recently in Eureka Springs to benefit the writer's colony at Dairy Hollow, and Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich talked to her.
But before vampires, faith and spirituality in the workplace. A first-of-its-kind conference next month at the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace at the Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas will examine the role of faith in the workplace. Judy Neal is the director of the center, and she says the conference, November 7th, 8th, and 9th, is a first in part because the study of spirituality in the workplace is a relatively new study.
This is a very new field, particularly in the field of management. And so for the Walton College as a business school, this is a field that no one's really addressed that much in research or in practice. And so the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace is the place where we're really looking at what's the leading edge research, what's the leading edge practice. And so we're bringing people together to say, what have we done so far that's meaningful, that people can use, and then what needs to be done?
The people being brought together at this conference, faith leaders, business leaders, students, yes. University of Arkansas students.
Right.
The idea is to get some sort of dialogue going about faith and spirituality in the, or continue a conversation?
It really is to start a dialogue between these groups, because there are academic groups that are in dialogue about this. There are faith groups that talk about the theology of work, but they never have academics there and they don't have business people there. There are business people who are talking about faith and spirituality in the workplace, but they don't talk to the students. They don't talk to the academics. So it's like this will be the first time we bring everyone together to look at their view. It's kind of like the many hands on the elephant. You know, everybody sees a different part, but together we can see a greater wholeness.
You know, for some people, I remember growing up, there would be signs you would see at public places. There are three things that are not going to be talked about here: sports, politics. And they would use a word that you do not use, but has concentric circle relationship, religion.
Correct.
This is, but as you point out, this is not religion that's being discussed. It's faith and spirituality, and there is a difference.
Yes. Yeah, and as you pointed out, there's concentric circles. So many people, if you say the word faith, they think you're talking about religion or a particular religion. But we see it as much broader than that. We define faith as a belief in something greater than yourself. And then spirituality is taking that belief and carrying it into action. And so it's trying to be as inclusive as we possibly can. When someone talks about a particular religion in the workplace, sometimes that creates conflict. Sometimes it even creates lawsuits. So all of that is something that we need to study and understand and figure out how can people be who they really are, deep in their faith, express that without creating conflict, without creating lawsuits, and trying to make a more open workplace.
While still being respectful of people who may have a different faith or spirituality or...
Or none. Yeah.
Yeah, you mentioned that you hope to include agnostic and atheistic views as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's really everybody's values centered. Whether you're agnostic or atheistic or have a particular faith tradition, all of those have values about how we can be more humanistic in the workplace and how we can live a deeper, more meaningful kind of work.
You mentioned that this is relatively new. There is some research, and some of this research will be discussed and presented during the conference in November.
Right. Yeah, we've got actually people from New Zealand who are going to talk about their research on the Maori perspective. So we have indigenous people that they've looked at. What are their values? And how might the rest of the world learn from this very high trust kind of culture? And we've got research on spirituality and higher education. And what's the difference between if you're a faith-based a higher education institution or a secular institution, comparing those and looking at how does that affect someone's commitment to the organization? How does that affect their sense of job satisfaction or purpose and meaning? So lots of interesting things.
Yeah, this comes out of something called the International Spirit at Work Awards.
Yes.
And you can find a list of organizations from around the world that have been honored with the International Spirit at Work Award, mm-hmm. which you had some hand in developing those awards?
I'm the one who founded it.
Well, that would be some hand.
I had some hand, and then I had lots and lots of help.
And you mentioned health. There were many hospitals and health organizations that mm-hmm. have been past honorees. What is looked for to be an honoree with the International Spirit at Work Awards?
Okay, and now it's called the International Faith and Spirit at Work Awards. And so what we look at is an organization that is open about wanting to nurture the human spirit in the workplace and to do that in a way that really does respect different faith traditions and different spiritual beliefs, and to have something really concrete that other organizations could emulate. And so they need to be able to mentor and be willing to educate other organizations about what they do.
When you talk about values at the workplace, that could be internal, treating employees fairly, mm-hmm. fair wage for mm-hmm. fair work. But it could also very much be external. What's your mission? And you know, not harming, not doing environmental damage, not,
right.
you know, fair trade, things like that.
Right. Yeah. We primarily, with the award, focus on the internal aspects because there's groups like Business for Social Responsibility that will focus more on the external, what are your relationships with your stakeholders. But we felt like there wasn't anybody paying attention to a particular stakeholder, the employees. So that's where our major focus is.
Some of the people speaking at this conference, and I should mention the conference is November 7th, 8th, 9th.
Yes.
At the Walton.
At the Walton College.
Campus, right. Mm-hmm. Some of the people, familiar to folks around here, John Tyson, Mr. Soderquist, but some names that are not from here,
mm-hmm.
including the keynote speaker.
Well, we have five keynote speakers. So John Tyson and Don Soderquist are two of the five keynote speakers. Bill Pollard, many people around here are familiar with Bill Pollard because he was the CEO of ServiceMaster, mm-hmm. which is a major faith-based organization, or faith-friendly organization might be more accurate to say.
That's three of the...
Okay.
The keynoters.
Then we have Lynn Sedgemore. She's the CEO of 157 Group in the United Kingdom, and that's a group that consults and does leadership development for higher education leaders. And she received the Spirit at Work Award in 2007 for the work that she did in creating real spiritual leadership programs for the leaders in the United Kingdom. And then the last person is Cindy Wigglesworth. She's from Texas, and she runs a company called Deep Change. And she's pretty known in the academic field for her work on spiritual intelligence. She's developed a measure of spiritual intelligence that's valid and reliable and is used in research but also used in organizations for development purposes.
The early bird special for registration has passed.
Mm-hmm.
But I did notice that for University of Arkansas students – if they show a valid ID, the price for this conference is pretty good.
You couldn't get much better than free. Yeah, that's part of our mission is we really see this as a ministry for students, that for the students who really want to live with integrity their faith and spiritual paths in the workplace, they can be so inspired by coming to hear the keynote speakers we have and hearing what the latest research is and meeting leaders in the business and in the faith communities. So we really want to reach out to them and have them be able to attend without any kind of barriers. So we're really excited about being able to make this opportunity available. We are looking for support from companies who will help us underwrite that.
And I think if I read the material correctly, you can go to the conference and mm-hmm. spend the money there, but you can also go to the awards dinner if you can't make the entire conference.
Right.
So there are different levels of of cost.
Yeah, so the awards dinner is Monday night, and most people say that that's one of the most meaningful parts of the conference. And when I repeat that, a lot of people go, yeah, sure, awards dinners. Those are like one of the most boring things I've ever gone to. But in these awards dinners, we ask the people who've received the award to tell their story. And that's what gets so moving. It's not, you know, here's your award and thank you very much. It's, let's hear from you. Why did you win the award? What are you doing that inspires others? And so that's been very, very meaningful for people.
And I want to look at the program here. I have a copy. Because there are some very interesting topics even before the conference itself formally begins, including faith, spirituality, and sustainability, spirituality and healthcare, spirituality and diversity. Those are free pre-conference workshops on Monday. That Monday afternoon alone sounds so very interesting.
Yeah, again, it's like something we really want to do for the community is if anybody wants to attend one of those workshops, they can attend for free, and we're hoping you'll get excited enough about that to want to then attend the full conference. And each of those workshops is 3 hours long, and they're meant to be very practical. Really hands-on on how do you implement and connect and integrate faith and spirituality and sustainability, or how do you deal with the diversity issues around the faith and spirituality in the workplace. Those kinds of things, very practical, and we're giving that as a gift to the community.
This could be a conference, and I don't mean this in any bad way at all, this could be a conference that for some people raises as many questions as it gives answers, especially mm-hmm. since it's the first one.
Yeah. And we hope that it does. I mean, in all spiritual traditions, they say the questions are more important than the answers. And so we're seekers. All of us are seeking. And the last part of the conference is really designed to address what are the big questions we can walk away with and what are we going to do about it? And how do we help each other? So many people working in this field really feel alone. Because it's kind of a fringe area to some people. You know, it's kind of out there on the edge. And so by coming together in community and exploring the questions, then we can see how we can help each other further the work.
Judy Neal is the director of the Tyson Center for Faith and Spirituality in the Workplace at the Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas. The center is sponsoring the International Faith and Spirit at Work Conference, November 7th through the 9th at the university. A link to more information about speakers and programs at the conference may be found at OzarksAtLarge.com. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me on the phone is Michael Tilley. He is the editor and publisher of the CityWire.com that covers business, politics, culture, and more in the Fort Smith region. A happy Thursday to you, Michael.
Well, good Thursday to you also. A beautiful Thursday.
Let's see. A company that is often in the news in Fort Smith, often associated with Fort Smith, Whirlpool, in the news this week.
Yes, they've, for several reasons, we pushed out a story, and it was coincidental. We pushed out a story on Tuesday, I believe, earlier this week, obviously, about union officials traveling to Little Rock to meet with Governor Beebe and his staff and top staff at the Arkansas Economic Development Commission. You know, they're concerned about the future of the plant. They're concerned not about employment decline, but just about the plant going away. So we got the governor's office confirmed that that visit did occur, and these union officials have also visited with Fort Smith officials. And then the same day we pushed that story out, Whirlpool confirmed that they had laid off 22 management workers. Now, that was and wasn't news. They had announced back in July they were going to be laying off up to 25 management people. And so what they did this week was just confirm that the number was 22 and not 25. But the visits by the union officials, the local union officials going to see the governor, that I think that should give the readers or whoever's following this issue a sense that it's not just the media that's concerned, that the people at the plant are concerned about the future.
And it's a story that this of course is not the end. This will bear watching for some time.
Right, and it's been a long time coming. In 2006, Whirlpool employed about 4,500 or about 4,600 at that plant here in Fort Smith. Today, they're down to less than 1,000. So, the Fort Smith economy has already taken a big hit. And so what state officials have said, Fort Smith Mayor Sandy Sanders has said, is that part of their goal is not only to convince them to keep it open, but to try to encourage them to bring more production back to the plant. When a large plant like that such a large facility has so few employees, you know, that's a lot of unused capacity. And typically companies, if they have a lot of unused capacity, they're not going to be using it, they'll get you know, out of that situation. So that's what the concern is.
That they'll start to look at the bottom line and see that this is
right,
not someplace they want to be.
Right.
Scott Bennett was in Fort Smith this week. He is the recently appointed director of the Arkansas State Highway and Transportation Department. And, boy, in Arkansas, we love to talk about highways. We don't always fund them, but we love to talk about them.
Oh, yes. Yes, and we like to blame either the state or the federal government for either not giving us enough highways or not enough of the ones we have. So, but Bennett was in town. He was part of a tour. Of course, he was visiting with the Regional Intermodal Transportation Authority, the board of directors there, because the highway department is involved in that their work as well. But he's on part of a tour, and Highway Commissioner Dick Trammell from your part of the world was with him. But they're trying to convince people that this bond program should be renewed on November 8th. Now, I know I've talked to some folks here, and Mr. Bennett even mentioned that the Washington County Tea Party had come out against it, and he was disparaging of their reasons. But I do hear from people who say this is not the time for a new tax. Well, the issue is there is no new taxes to be raised on this bond program. We're renewing a bond program, and the proceeds to pay the bonds back are already in place. So that tax of 4 cents per gallon tax on diesel fuel is already in place. So it's just Arkansas Constitution requires voters to approve bond programs, so that's what they're doing. It's not raising taxes.
Do you think there is any concern that this continuation would fail?
Yes, I think the state officials and, you know, the mood right now is just an anti-tax, anti-government mood, and I think state officials are concerned that they'll see this bond program and they'll just out of hand reject it automatically, not knowing what it does. And there are even some folks saying, well, we don't need to be building new roads. We need to be taking care of the roads we have. Well, that's exactly what this bond program does. It's rehabilitating interstates. And I've even talked to some folks here in Fort Smith who said, well, I'm going to vote against it because last time they did it, they didn't rehabilitate 540 through Fort Smith, which is really just odd logic. I mean, okay, so because they didn't do it last time, you want to prevent them from there ever being a chance that they'll do it on the next round. So there is no logic to that point.
The tax revenue roller coaster continues for Arkansas. Results for September show an uptick.
Right, it's roller coaster is a good way to put it. There was an uptick. It'll be interesting to see if any analysis comes out on how the tax-free holiday helped or didn't help. But the good thing from the report is that what we're seeing in Arkansas, or what the report shows, is the sales tax portions of the tax collections are still strong. And that shows the consumer is still spending. Now, it's not as strong as we'd like to be. I mean, I think they're right at or maybe a little below, I forget the number on their budget estimate, but the year-over-year collections are up, and it still shows that the consumer, at least in Arkansas, hasn't completely withdrawn. They're still out there spending. So if we're looking for a good sign, there is one.
And finally, I don't know if you're a Mac guy, a PC guy, both, neither, but it's hard to talk about business today and not think about Steve Jobs, who really revolutionized the worlds that you and I work in and so many others.
Well, there's no question. And I am a Mac guy. I just don't understand why people use PCs. I mean, to me, it's like, you know, you can ride a horse, you can drive a car. I mean, you know, that's the difference. But, yes, Steve Jobs is he is going to be in that, in that category of the Einstein, I mean, the Edisons and Alexander Graham Bell in terms of how he changed the dynamic of a culture. I mean, imagine your world now without an iPhone or an iPad. And then not only that, but think about what he did to the market. Look at all of these other copycats that emerged with their smartphones and their, you know, touch screens. He and his group led that. And I hear some analysts say, well, you know, Jobs was just, he wasn't the whole team. There are other people doing it. But I think that's, it took a leader, and it took someone like Steve Jobs pushing these folks. And it's just a shame, because it'd be nice to for a society to have somebody's talent like that for a long time, for a much longer time, at least in 56 years.
Well, I just found it very interesting that I found out about Steve Jobs' death when it was an alert from the Washington Post pushed to my iPhone. And then at the bottom of that Washington Post alert is the standard line they have that you can subscribe to these alerts for iPhone, iPod Touch, or iPad. And I mean,
yeah, he's involved in his own his own announcement. But I'm talking to you on an iPhone now. I'll go home and fire up my Macs and start working there. Later this afternoon, one of my daughters will fight over who gets the iPad first. Mm-hmm. I mean, so. At least at the Tilley House, he had quite an effect.
Michael Tilley is the editor and publisher of the City Wire that covers home, business, culture, and more for the Fort Smith region. Michael, thank you so much.
Thanks for your time, Kyle.
Earth, sky.
Today, evidence of a literal rain of gold from outer space billions of years ago.
The same rain of meteorites that made craters on the moon likely bombarded Earth with gold and other precious metals, according to researchers at the University of Bristol.
It's thought Earth's precious metals, like gold and platinum, would have migrated to Earth's inner core. The core might contain enough precious metals to blanket Earth with a layer more than 4 meters or 12 feet deep, scientists say.
We can't yet penetrate Earth to reach the core. So where does the gold and jewelry come from? Many scientists believe a meteor shower pummeled Earth with precious metals after the core formed. These metals might have mixed in closer to Earth's surface. To test this theory, the University of Bristol scientists looked at 3.8 billion-year-old rocks found in Greenland, some of the oldest known rocks on Earth.
They compared tungsten isotopes from the older rocks to the same isotopes in younger rocks. The ratios found support the theory that a meteorite bombardment brought the gold found in jewelry today. To read more, come to earthsky.org and search for gold meteorites. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.
We're at earthsky.org.
Later on the program, starting a new restaurant is always a challenging endeavor. The owners of Legacy Blues in Fayetteville hope their commitment to jazz and blues will help them stand apart from the crowd. A visit inside the lounge later.
The University of Arkansas Theater presents Up now through Sunday, October 9th at the University Theater Fine Arts Center in Fayetteville. The drama explores a family search for life's greater purpose. Tickets and more information are available at 575-3946.
Charlene Harris, a popular supernatural Southern mystery writer, made several rare appearances in Northwest Arkansas last weekend to raise money for and awareness about the writer's colony at Dairy Hollow in Eureka Springs. Harris's novels about Louisiana's powerful vampire culture have been adapted to the HBO television series True Blood. Jacqueline Froelich caught up with Charlene Harris at the Writers' Colony and brings us her story.
The Writers' Colony at Dairy Hollow, situated on a steep mountain ridge just north of downtown Eureka Springs, is usually busy with up-and-coming authors looking to make the New York Times best-selling list. But last weekend, New York Times best-selling author Charlene Harris paid the colony a visit, thrilling residents. Two public events staged at the Crescent Hotel and Peel Mansion in Bentonville drew out nearly 200 followers and fellow writers who paid to hear Harris speak. All proceeds were donated to the Writers' Colony at Dairy Hollow, one of the few such colonies in the South. It provides 60 residencies to writers from all genres for only $45 a day, the rest subsidized by foundations and colony patrons. In between lunch and her first talk at the Crescent, Harris sat for a bit in one of the colony's writing suites, which she said had a very fertile atmosphere.
I think it's great for writers to have a place where they can go and be quiet, where they can turn off their television, they can turn off their telephone, their family is not there, which, you know, of course, people love their families, but when you're trying to write, you really don't want anybody else around. You want to be able to shut the door and do the work. And that's why this place is so fantastic.
Harris understands the deep discipline it takes to write. She started in 1981, creating murder mysteries. A decade later, she got hooked on serial mysteries featuring strong young working-class female protagonists. But her career took its current trajectory in 2001 with the Sookie Stackhouse urban fantasy series. Sookie's a pretty blonde telepathic waitress who inhabits a northern Louisiana bar in the fictional impoverished town of Bonton, along with drunken Cajuns, devout Pentecostals, and creepy hustlers. Sookie must also reckon with a metaphysical culture comprised of vampires, werewolves, fairies, witches, and shapeshifters, some benevolent, but mostly malevolent. Harris has written a dozen titles so far in the Sookie Stackhouse series, but her fan base instantly swelled when one of her books was picked up and adapted for HBO television by writer Alan Ball as True Blood. It premiered in the autumn of 2008 and is now in its fifth season. Here's a clip of Sookie, Anna Paquin, meeting Bill the vampire, played by Stephen Moyer, who ends up falling for her.
What are you?
I told you, I'm a waitress.
No. You're something more than that. You're something more than human.
I beg your pardon?
Sookie. It's an unusual name, Sookie. Is it short for something else?
Nope. Just plain Sookie.
May I call on you sometime?
Which he does. They fall in love and somehow negotiate a relationship between the undead and the living. Bill, an eternally handsome southern vampire who was bitten during the Civil War, is a good match for Sookie, who's deeply principled in both this series and books.
Because I think every time you look in the mirror, you ask yourself, am I doing the right thing today? Was I kind today? Was I thoughtful of other people today? Am I too proud? Am I too haughty? And to me, life is a lot about self-reflection. Not that I'm always accurate and not that I'm an especially nice person, but I think that that should be a big part of everybody's life. And so therefore, since I wanted to make Sookie a likable person, self-reflection is a big part of her life, and self-evaluation and making the best of what she has, which I think is the cornerstone of her existence.
Despite being an orphan, not to mention a victim by the hands of an evil uncle, Sookie Stackhouse has cultivated tremendous mindfulness, which carries her through all sorts of harrowing situations. Harris's Southern Vampire series is clearly at the core and very much behind the torrent of vampire mania, including Stephanie Meyer's insanely popular Twilight franchise.
I think that this is what I think. Now, if you ask me another day, I'd give a different answer. But most often, I think it's because our culture is so youth-obsessed and physical perfection-obsessed that the vampire represents an ideal of physical perfection kept at its height without effort. I mean, vampires never have to have a knee replacement. They never need to get bifocals. They'll never have to go on Medicaid. And I think that is the Western culture ideal.
Because unless they're staked in the heart or are purposely exposed to sunlight, vampires do not die. Harris will admit to having fed off a few gothic writers in her day, especially Anne Rice. But Charlaine Harris's tales appeal to all ages.
I have a very wide range of core readers. Very often at my signings, I'll get three generations of the same family who come together. And I think that's wonderful to think of families talking about the books while they're doing the dishes, while they're out picking apples, while they're in the car going to shop. To me, it's fantastic to think about people talking about the characters and the issues in the books.
And obviously, young readers will grow and change as Harris's characters grow and change and shapeshift.
Well, the books are obviously all part of a bigger story. And I know where the bigger story is going, but it's also necessary to provide an open and shut story within each book. And sometimes I achieve that and sometimes I don't. When I read criticism of my books, which I do if I trust the source, because some criticisms are quite valid and things I need to think about. A lot of them say, well, this book was obviously a transitional book. And I'm going, well, they're all transitional books. They're all books where something pivotal changes and takes the bigger arc in a different direction to my way of thinking.
So her characters either die or evolve. In civil rights, or in this case, vampires' rights, figure strongly in the television series, with honest, clean-living vampire political leaders advocating for the franchise. But Harris says that also streams through the books and does draw some parallels to the modern LGBTQ movement.
It's very deep in the books, and I'm always surprised when people just read them as adventures and they're, you know, their main interest in the book is who Sookie's going to end up with eventually, if she has to end up with somebody. I understand that, and I understand that the books are fun, even if you're not trying to look for a deeper meaning. But I do have an agenda, and I'm always glad when people say, you know, this is like saying GLBT people are not so bad. And I'm going, that's right. There are lots of people who just have never thought about that. They just don't think about it at all. And I'm going, don't you think if you live for 1,000 years, you would be tempted to experiment with almost any kind of sexuality? And don't you think that would actually be pretty much okay? And they're just going, oh, I never thought about it. And I'm going, well, you know, I'm just saying.
And while many of the vampires are entrenched in evil, some are given an opportunity to drop their habit due to the invention of modern manufactured bottled synthetic blood, a beverage branded, of course, True Blood. They can consciously choose to not feed on humans then and seek assimilation into human culture. But conversely, vampire blood, siphoned by humans and sold on the black market, is like meth times 10. So what does it taste like?
Yeesh, who knows? Probably pretty salty, I would think. Salty and minerally. That's my best guess.
And kind of thick, kind of coagulated in the
veins. That's
vein.
What I would think. And cool. Not hot. Which would be like...
The HBO television series is explicit and sometimes excruciatingly gory compared to the books, which leave lots to the imagination. But in both, Sookie always somehow prevails, despite being the center of life and death supernatural circumstances, which leads to Harris herself, when not traveling to writers' conferences, media conventions, and national interviews. Her writing days are occupied by some pretty strange stuff. Still, this married mother of three, born in Tunica, Mississippi, and a creature of the rural South, is cloaked in provincial culture.
Well, I'm a Christian. And even though that seems crazy some days because it's hard. It's a very hard religion to practice. I'm still trying. And even though some days I think this is just a ridiculous thing to believe, nonetheless, I do believe it. And it's a huge part of my life.
And it's true. Everyone who meets her says Charlene Harris is generous, kind, patient, funny, and like Jesus, perceives all people, even supernatural hybrids, as God's creatures. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
If you'd like to learn more, you can go to writerscolony.org. And more about Charlene Harris is at her website, charleneharris.com. It's Thursday, October 6th, 2011. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Becca Bacon-Martin, features editor at the morning or at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers. There's a lot to get in there.
You know, we were just talking about existentially. We don't know where we are, but at least I know who I am most days.
That's right. What do you got for us?
Tonight, fall's coming.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not too late for a concert on the lawn. If you missed Gully Park, if you missed the ones at Pinnacle and Rogers, there's a concert on the lawn with the Jack Mitchell Big Band at 6 tonight at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks in Fayetteville.
Well, that'll be great.
It's $10 to get in. I don't know if the Butterfly House will be open. I have not yet seen it, which hurts me.
I haven't either.
But this might be your opportunity. You can find out more at 750-2620. And there's a reading and book signing with Carrie Groner, author of Exiles, at 7:30 at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. Always a good time. 443-2080. And of course, in my opinion, the place to be tonight is the Alma Performing Arts Center, where Trout Fishing in America is in concert. You know, Trout has a new children's book out called Chicken Joe Forgets Something Important, and I believe they will be doing some music from that book for children. It's a family show. It starts at 7:30, and tickets are $10 for children and $20 for adults. You can find out more at the Alma Performing Arts Center website.
Becca Bacon-Martin is the features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Ithi Agnihotri Mudholkar.
I'm Kyle Kellums. And recently, Ithi, you went to a new restaurant in Fayetteville.
I did.
Blues Legacy. And we had discussions.
Legacy Blues.
Legacy Blues. Thank you. Legacy Blues. We had discussions about this venue, and I thought it would be an interesting story because they're trying something that
Not many restaurants or lounge bars have tried before.
Not in this area, anyway.
Yes, and it's a very interesting place. Wonderful music, I have to say. I just wanted to stay there and just listen. But it has a lot of food, good food, and it's a great place to hang out with friends and family. So
the idea here is that blues and jazz will be the tentpole for this, and it'll be interesting to see how that succeeds.
Yeah. Okay, so as you walk into the front, you'll notice our nice signs up top, and there's two of them. I just feel like it looks good. You walk up and to your left, you've got an outdoor patio that we've got tables for seating. You can be seen from all over Dixon and West Avenue. And we do have another patio on the other side that is available for seating as well. So as you go in, you've got a gigantic 12-foot mirror on your right.
T.J. Leffler is the co-owner of Legacy Blues, a blues and jazz lounge that opened its doors on the Labor Day weekend. He's taking me on a tour of the place that's located in the Legacy Building on West Watson Street near Hammond Trees in Fayetteville.
Right here on our right, and as you look in, you've got an art piece from Danny Broadway from Memphis. He did a painting specially designed for us, and we're actually selling some different paintings of his with our logo on it. Special edition, there's not many of them. It's something you can buy for, I believe, $29. But he is our featured artist that we have throughout the restaurant. And he's out of Memphis.
TJ says, growing up, his family owned a restaurant in Searcy, a town near Little Rock. His father, Jim Leffler, played in a blues band professionally for years. The Leffler family moved to Fayetteville a few years ago and decided to open up a place that would bring together great music and great food.
I would define Legacy Blues as an inspired American restaurant, very upscale, but caters to everybody. You're welcome to wear whatever you like. Be prepared for a great experience to come and not only have great food, but hear some really great music, especially if you have a passion for jazz or blues.
The place has been in the works for a while. Support from family and friends helped the two-year-old idea become a reality. Legacy Blues offers live music four nights a week, Wednesday through Saturday. There is light music early in the evening, something that people can easily converse over while having dinner. Around 9, the music switches to an energetic pace. The lounge features jazz and blues acts, focusing on Delta blues, Chicago blues, and Louisiana-influenced blues. A quick look at the calendar on their website, legacyblues.com, is telling. In the short time it's been open, Legacy Blues has hosted artists from not only Arkansas, but also other states.
We have acts that so far have come from Clarksdale, Mississippi, a few from Little Rock, a few locals, and where we have booked some from actually all over the southeast part of the country that are going to come in the next couple months. We pay them to come in. We're not going to charge a cover charge. We hope you just come in and have a great experience while you're eating or drinking. We take care of them while they're here. We want them to come back to Fayetteville. We really cater to what they need from us. But yeah, we've reached out all over the country looking for blues acts. I mean, a lot of them have been found here locally in Arkansas, but we will have a good mix of local Arkansas talent as well as national talent.
Along with the blues and jazz music, Legacy Blues also hopes to charm Northwest Arkansans with its food. All
right. So, well, we have the special Vulcan double broiler that we have a flat top that sears the steak on all sides up top. And we can cook to any temperature much faster than we could with a conventional grill.
The lounge offers steaks, seafood, and pulled pork, among other food items. Currently, the place features a limited menu, but TJ says it'll slowly evolve based upon customer suggestions and preferences. Chef John Cromwell lists some of the more popular items.
The most popular so far is probably the South Beach fish, just because of the presentation. It looks really nice. And then just this week, new to the menu, we have a red snapper. That's probably going to be one of the more popular items as well, I think. And appetizer-wise, we have some really popular appetizers. The Captain Tad's Chicken Bites, which is battered and coated in our secret house recipe. Also catfish strips and beer-battered chicken bites with a chili kind of sweet and sour sauce that comes on that.
The kitchen serves food until 11 p.m., although TJ says, for the time being, if you come in before midnight, you will get food. The Lefflers also plan to do a shorter version of the menu until 2 a.m. According to TJ, Legacy Blues is for people from all age groups. He says, while there are restaurants and bars in town that feature live music, Legacy Blues is trying something different.
I do think we have something very unique. I've been in Fayetteville for 10 years, and we have friends been here a lot longer than that. Haven't seen anything this upscale and blues. We are trying to be only blues and jazz. So bringing in blues acts and jazz acts, I feel like, is a rare thing in Arkansas, although there's a deep love for the blues music and jazz in Arkansas. There are festivals all over the state for jazz and blues, but rare do you find a restaurant that only caters to them. And you combine it with a high-end restaurant like ours, it's definitely unique, but it's been very successful so far. It's taken off very well, and people have really actually appreciated what we're doing for Fayetteville.
Legacy Blues, a blues and jazz lounge, is open Wednesday through Saturday from 4 p.m. until 2 a.m. For more information, log on to legacyblues.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me is Jody Beznoska, Vice President of Communications for Walton Arts Center. Welcome back.
Thank you. What a nice fall we're having.
So far, it's been pretty much perfect.
I love it. It's fantastic. One of the best times to be here, I think. And it's that time of year now where everything really, really picks up for everybody, I think. Not just for us, but, you know, football season's in full swing and everything. But we have a real busy couple of weeks coming up, and we're almost looking ahead to November already in terms of shows. So let's just dive right in.
Okay.
This afternoon, tonight, we will have two amazing things going on at the Art Center. The first is free, and it's the opening reception for Leon Nyhaus's exhibition Then and Now in our Joy Pratt Markham Gallery. For those of you who don't know this artist, I got to poke around and look at his work the other day, and it's so cool.
Yeah.
It's these incredible baskets, but they're almost – they're more – they're – they're artwork rather than baskets. Like, I'm not so certain you'd put, you know, knitting needles in these baskets.
No,
but he works with local materials. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of his signature things. And he was a 2005 Arkansas Living Treasure. And so that opens today with an opening reception from 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. That's free. And then you could just hang out. Mm-hmm. And go to the Martha Graham Dance Company performance tonight.
That's
as
tonight.
Well. Yeah.
If not a once-in-a-lifetime chance to see this in Fayetteville, once in a generation.
I think so. That's tonight at 7 p.m. So you can come to the gallery opening, and then you can come to Martha Graham. And then if that's not enough time with us, you can come back tomorrow, and you could see Dala in Star Theater. Those shows are at 8 p.m. and 10 p.m., wonderful Canadian folk duo with just angelic voices, amazing harmonies. They have won all kinds of folk awards. They've been playing in festivals all over the world. And so you can come see them in a nice, quiet theater with a glass of wine. So that's tomorrow, Friday night at 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. We will also have Need to Breathe out at the Amp. I was told yesterday that start time has moved from 7:30 to 8.
Okay.
So 8 o'clock at the Amp tomorrow for Need to Breathe. If you're out and about in Fayetteville on Saturday and you're at the Fayetteville Farmers Market, come see us. We'll have a booth there. And I'm not 100% sure of this, but I'm pretty sure we'll probably have a ticket special. So you can stop by and see if there's a discount to be had. And then on Sunday, you can complete your weekend with Walden Arts Center by coming to see the Emerson String Quartet.
10x10.
10x10, the first show in our 10x10 series. Tickets for that show are only $10. That's what 10x10 means. But 10x10 also means a creative conversation beforehand. So the creative conversation is at 2 p.m. Peter Lane, our CEO, will lead the conversation, and it will feature two of the musicians from the quartet. So we're pretty excited about that. We'll get to talk to them about touring and about how they're working to keep classical music vibrant and alive. We'll also get to talk about the second piece that they'll play on the program, which was written by Pierre Gilbert for them. Mm-hmm. How does that change? How does it affect their work? So that's Sunday. The creative conversation is at 2 p.m. and the show is at 3 p.m. And for those of you who really want to go see the L.A. Philharmonic play in the movie theaters that afternoon, because that's happening at 4 o'clock, I think you could do it. I think you could do both. And then next weekend, our hall will be full of kids. We'll have a lot of kids coming in to see Step Africa, which will be here for a kind of residency week with us. But then there is a public performance of Step Africa on Thursday the 13th at 7 p.m. And you guys had an interview mm-hmm. with Step Africa a couple days ago, which was fun. And then Friday in Star Theater, that's the 14th at 8 p.m. and 10 p.m., we will have the jazz singer Renee Marie, and she's just an
amazing life story.
Yeah.
And an amazing talent.
She's mm-hmm. an incredible voice. She's just got a real sense of fire behind her, I think. So she's going to be a wonderful performance, also in Star Theater. So that's Friday the 14th, 8 p.m. and 10 p.m. And then we're off for a little bit. We will kick back up again on the 23rd with our second countdown conversation at the Fayetteville Public Library for the 10x10 Art Series. This will be focusing on the importance of being earnest. So we will have David Jolliffe from the university leading us in a conversation about that play. And
so this is a conversation really that's about the importance.
Yes.
Of the importance of
exactly.
being earnest.
Yes, very true.
Yes.
Had to get that.
Yes.
Definitely had to have that. Professor Jolliffe has been in the play, has taught the play many, many times. And so we're going to discuss, you know, why does this play get done? And this has a lot to do with the company who's performing it. It's Aquila Theater. And they have a real focus on trying to bring those classics to people, you know, in professional settings. And so they take the classics and they kind of play with them a little bit. So this importance of being earnest is going to be a little more modern. It's going to have a little more current flair to it. So that's what we're going to talk about at the countdown conversation. And that's October 23rd. That's a Sunday. It's at 2 p.m. in the Walker Room at the Fayetteville Public Library. And then the show, Importance of Being Earnest, is a couple weeks later in November.
Right.
And so then we will, on the 25th, we'll kick off West Side Story, which is finally here after long waiting. Tickets for that are going very quickly. So if you want to go to see West Side Story, I would get your tickets now. Don't wait till the very end. If you want to get good seats, you know, go online and order them now if you can.
I think this has been proven by scientific research. Best musical ever.
I think so.
I think it's been proven by
I think
that.
It might be proven.
Yes.
And if it hasn't, then somebody needs to do that study.
That's right.
We learned the other day that there's an interesting story about the evolution of the Spanish language in this new version of West Side Story, because this is a revival that opened on Broadway, I don't know, 3 or 4 years ago maybe. Originally, when it was done on Broadway, almost half of the dialogue was done in Spanish. So they reduced that. So there is still some Spanish language in the show, but it's only about 12% now. And I just thought that was a really fascinating thing about how shows change in a creative world. So that's West Side Story from the 25th of October through the 30th. It runs for a full week. Tickets still available, and I would get them now if you can. And then just to quickly look ahead into November, can't believe we're talking about November, we have the Munich Symphony on the 1st. And I am so very excited about this because they're doing Mozart's Requiem. Such a beloved piece. They're going to have a wonderful choral group with them. This is a must-see for classical music listeners. So that's the 1st of November. On the 3rd, we will begin to kick off our Art of Wine Festival, if you can believe that, with a Scotch tasting.
Mm-hmm.
Our master of whiskey, who will lead the Scotch tasting, he looks at Scotch like wine. And so we love to have him back. He'll be the same guy as before.
Is that on his business card, Master of Whiskey?
I believe it is.
That
what a
could
great
be
title.
The coolest thing you could ever have on your business card.
What do you do for a living? I'm a master of whiskey. I mean, how awesome is that?
That's pretty cool.
He's fantastic. He usually shows up in a kilt and leads the group through the different tastings. So that's on the 3rd of November. And then we mentioned the importance of being earnest. I wanted to make sure I got the show date out for that. That is, I believe, the 5th. At 8 p.m. And that morning, actually, on the 5th, we'll also have a kids show in the hall, a wonderful production of Alice in Wonderland. So lots coming up in November, and we'll talk more about that later on. But you can get information about all of this at waltonartscenter.org, or you can call us at 443-5600.
See, if the Red Sox had been in the playoffs, Jody, you would be so conflicted. Go to the hall. Be in front of the television. It's so much easier this way.
It is very. I will admit that it does make it easier to make my cultural choices when the Red Sox are not in the playoffs. Thank you, Kyle. Thank you very much.
See, being a Royals fan, I've had that. I've had no conflict for more than 20 years.
Oh, your time is coming.
That's what they say.
I believe it.
Thanks, Jody.
Thank you.
Support for KUAF is provided by Walton Arts Center, presenting the Canadian folk duo Dala on Friday, October 7th at 8 p.m. Dala's songs and music are inspired by the classics of Joni Mitchell, Neil Young, Bob Dylan, and Gordon Lightfoot. Tickets and more information are available at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600.
Speaking of duos, one of our favorite duos performs tonight at the Alma Performing Arts Center, Trout Fishing in America, and would like to congratulate Pamela Dixon, Fort Smith. She was listening yesterday and was picked out of all the correct answers yesterday. And so she will be enjoying the Trout Fishing in America show tonight Alma Performing Arts Center on us.
Congratulations, Pat.
And Trout Fishing and Alma PAC. So thank you.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Springdale, Rogers, Bentonville, Hawkeye, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas.
And tomorrow, a brand new edition of Ozarks Launch. Christina Thomas will be sitting where you are. So, and then you and I back together Sunday for Weekend Ozarks at Large.
And before we forget, two nights on tomorrow's show.
Yes. Yes. Two nights.
And two nights as in the K-N-I-G-H-D-S
yes.
nights.
Yes. That'll be
very,
a lot of fun.
Very excited.
This is Ozarks at Large, which is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Iti Agnihotri Mudholkar.
Thanks so much for listening. As I said, another brand new edition tomorrow at noon on KUAF. Have a splendid Thursday.